Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not only in Calgary, Alberta, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, I can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this episode with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. Starting off with contract news, Zach Brown has officially signed a new contract with McLaren. He will stay the team principal until 2030. Congratulations to Zach Brown. I do have to admit, I did have my reservations when he first started with the team. I thought he was just kind of a be in there, be in the spotlight, don't really know a whole lot of what I'm doing, just kind of get into F1 to become popular, so on and so forth. But he has definitely proved himself to be a team manager that really knows the sport, really loves the sport, and generally wants to continue the success that McLaren has had. Really good signings with Oscar Piastri, really went to bat for him when he knew he needed another driver that was going to be successful and the future of the team. So, Zach Brown, congratulations on the brand new contract. Next item up for debate today. Full practice 1 and 2 and 3 happened this weekend. It's a regular Australian weekend. Some drama that has some implications for this race and for a very specific team down the road, and potentially a issue that we might see more and more often as we go into the season. Let me break it down to you. Both Alex Albon and Logan Sargeant got into crashes in P1 and 2, respectively. Alex Albon's crash was much more significant than Logan Sargeant's. Logan kind of just kissed the wall. I'm calling it a crash. I'm being a little overdramatic with that. It was more of an incident. Didn't really wreck the car, bent some things out of shape. Not exactly the biggest deal in the world, except for Williams only brought so many spare parts with them, including they didn't bring any spare chassis with them to Australia. Now, Australia is generally one of the races in the season where you kind of bring the minimal amount of stuff possible and hope you get through the weekend, just because it is so far and it is so expensive for the teams to bring extra equipment, extra parts, pieces, all that kind of fun stuff. So with the crash that had happened with Alex Albon, he demolished his car. He fucked it up something fierce. Enough where he missed all of full practice 2, all of full practice 3, but actually I should say he missed all of full practice 2. He was able to participate a little bit in full practice 3, but the way he participated in it is the reason why we're having this conversation, because Williams didn't bring enough spare parts, chassis, so on and so forth with them to Australia. One, they didn't have a spare chassis to bring along with them. And two, because of the lack of spare parts, Williams had to make a very hard decision, and they decided to bench Logan Sargeant for the entire Australian Grand Prix weekend, and they modified Logan Sargeant's car to the Alex Albon specifications. So Albon was able to race all the way through qualifying and through the practice, and Logan Sargeant was left on the sidelines watching. Now, to Logan Sargeant's benefit, he could have totally done a Kimi Raikkonen and got all upset and just not hung out for the rest of the weekend, not learn anything, not be with the team. But Logan wanting to show that he is still part of the team, whether he's racing or not, because I think in my mind, he wants to show he is a team player because he doesn't have a seat for the 2025 season. He did stick around for the entire weekend, learned some things, showed some support, which is fantastic. Alex Albon, he was respectable in all of qualifying and in the race itself. It was a really good display, really strong pace from him. He probably didn't place as high as he wanted to. That's just the way these race car drivers are. Unless they win, they can always do better. My issue with this is not the fact that Logan Sargeant had to sit out, or they told him that they had to sit out. The more alarming part is that Williams doesn't have enough spare parts. Now, this issue can potentially go on to the next race in Japan, where they still may not have a spare chassis ready for Logan Sargeant or Alex Albon to race. Which, I mean, if you don't have it now, when will you have it? Do you not have it because it's an upgraded one? Do you not have it because of budget restraints? or like what's going on? Is there delays in the manufacturing of the new chassis? This has the potential of not quite ruining Williams' season just because we are only in the third round of the season, but it is a potential indicator for other lower end teams that are a little bit more cost or budget conscious that we may see one car per team a little more often than we want, just because you can't always afford to get new parts. You can't always reuse old parts as well. I hope this is not the case. I do hope Williams is able to get that next chassis in for Japan, which is the next race. So it'll be a little closer for them to bring in these spare parts. It'll be a little more cost effective for them to bring in these spare parts. But at the same time, I really hope that we don't see this issue again with Williams or potentially with Haas or potentially with Kick, Sauber, or any of those teams where they're having to choose one driver over the other to see who races because you don't have enough parts. Now, here's a question that just popped into mind. What do you think about this? Let's say for conversation's sake that Williams only has one chassis for Japan. Who's going to race? Are they going to let Alex Albon take the wheel again? Or are they going to give Logan Sargeant a good chance to prove himself? Because if you only have one car, only one person practices, you're not allowed to split the practice time. So one person races, one person qualifies, one person does practice. So the other person essentially has an unintentional 2 weeks off. Yeah, you've got the simulators and all of that kind of fun stuff, but it's not the same as behind the wheel experience. Again, a question that gets stacked on top of that. If Logan Sargeant ends up missing more than one race due to the fact that Williams doesn't have enough parts and so on and so forth, are they going to take that into consideration when it comes to negotiation time for Logan Sargeant? Is it going to make Logan Sargeant look bad because he wasn't able to race because his team didn't have enough money to supply him with the parts that he needed? Is this going to negatively impact him in the future just for the fact that, okay, maybe you don't have as many races, you don't have as much experience, we're going to hold that against you? And just for that fact, he's not going to have the experience that he needs to further his career, to get more experience, to get on a better team. It's just that trickle-down effect. I really hope that Williams does have the money that they can get the chassis ready in time for Japan. Suzuka is a fantastic track. It's very entertaining. The weather's a little bit iffy. It promises to be a very exciting race. One that I think Logan Sargeant can take advantage of the circumstances and put in a proper effort. I'm hoping both Williams are able to do this next weekend. Not next weekend, next race, I should say. And the last topic today, a little bit of race orientated, a little bit more legal action orientated stuff. No, this has nothing to do with Red Bull. I'm still not touching that topic just because, in my opinion, it has absolutely nothing to do with racing itself. It's more of the office work. This next topic is a little bit of both. It is race orientated, but is also a little bit to set a precedence. If you remember last season, the FIA put Susie Wolf and Toto Wolf under investigations for alleged, essentially, I don't want to say insider information trading, but they had accused Susie Wolf, who is the director of the F1 Academy, which is the women's series, with sharing secrets, or the alleged allegation was she was sharing personal secrets or information about the academy with her husband, who happens to be Toto Wolf. Well, obviously nothing came about it. All the charges were dismissed. They were cleared of any wrongdoing, so on and so forth, as in my opinion, they should have been, just because the FIA can't separate home and state doesn't mean that other people can't. Well, in Susie Wolf's credit, she does not take this line down. She has officially charged the FIA, but she has essentially begin the legal process of suing the FIA for what turns up to be a defamation of character kind of thing. She is putting the FIA on blast for, I don't want to call them criminal charges because they're not, it's a little different in Europe than it is in North America and the US when it comes to the legal system, for as much as I can understand it. But essentially what she's doing is she's doing a countersuit against the FIA for essentially defamation of character, that they accused her of something she didn't do, and she's not going to let them get away with it. I think this is a fantastic idea from Susie. It sets a precedence that the FIA and Formula One are not the be-all and end-all over everything that is the employees, the fans, the rights, all that kind of stuff. They kind of take it a little bit too far with their authority, in my opinion. If there were actual charges to go against them, if these allegations were actually true, they should have dealt with it in a very private manner. They should have kept the information as secret as possible to deal with this in-house and not get it out to the public. But since they got out, it did get out to the public. It did get leaked. It wasn't from Susie. It wasn't from Toto. It was from a source in the FIA. So I think this is absolutely appropriate for Susie Wolf to put the FIA on blast in a legal suit, going anything that has to be with business has to stay business. And because it's a multi-billion dollar business every single year with the fans and the rights and the merchandising and all this kind of stuff, it needs to stay within the business realm and not everything needs to be in the public eye. Now, this has happened about a week ago. There hasn't been any kind of update so far, so I don't believe we're going to hear a whole lot on the proceedings on how it goes until it's over, essentially. Now, I haven't been able to find, and I've looked around, I've asked people that, you know, a little bit more seasoned than myself reporting-wise, there hasn't been any stipulation on what she's looking for as terms of damage, if it's an apology, if it's money towards anything, whatever the case may be. There hasn't been any side of this is what I want out of this situation. It's very much in the beginning stage, but I think this is the right course of action to take. Private lives need to stay private. Business is business, and there is absolutely, in my opinion, no room to mix personal with business. Even though sometimes you work in the same organization at home, people still need to be able to talk. They still need to be able to have their lives, talk about their workday, whether it's complaining, whether it's just working things out. People are people. But business needs to stay business and private needs to stay private. And that is the hot topics for this week for the Australian Grand Prix. Let us move right into qualifying. Weather for qualifying, it was a little windy. The sun was out. It was sunshining. Track temperatures around about the mid-40s. With the Australian track, because of the heat and because how the track is built and how it is maintained, it is very high degradation on this circuit, which means you blow through tires a lot faster than you normally would. It also means that sometimes your tires come into their perfect window a little bit sooner than you had anticipated, which sometimes lead into more than one pit stop. But we're talking qualifying right now. Everybody is in where they need to be. Carlos Sainz is back in the Ferrari, which is he made a week-long recovery, which is astonishing. And it just shows how in shape these athletes are and how driven these guys are to get back into the seat to do the thing they love. It was a great qualifying. A little bit of questioning when it comes to the performance of some of the cars. Personally, in my opinion, we're looking at, unfortunately, I'm going to pick on them again. Unfortunately, the Kick, Stake, Sauber F1 team, whatever you want to call them. Oh, by the way, they also had to change their name again this weekend in Australia. They are known as the Kick F1 team this weekend instead of Stake Sauber. Again, it's because of the legalization of gambling and the licensing that they have in the States, but not necessarily in Australia. So they will be known as the Kick F1 team today. Joe Guan Yu, Valtteri Bottas. Bottas did much better than what was expected. Joe Guan Yu did much worse than it came to be expected. The reason for that, in my opinion, it's they got the parts wrong on Joe Guan Yu's car than they did Bottas. Essentially, what had happened was when you are in Australia, the curbs are a little bit higher than any other track on the F1 circuit, which means you have a tendency, depending on how you drive, to pick up a little bit more floor damage and wing damage than you normally would, say, Spa or Coda or even Monza, things of that nature. So the way that Joe Guan Yu loves to drive, and it's not a bad thing at all, he loves to hug those corners. He likes to take that less looping corner and he likes to cut those angles down where it's a straight line as much as humanly possible. He's actually pretty good at it compared to that he's in a shit car. The only thing with that is because they put a brand new wing on the Sauber this year, really good dynamics, really good aero flow, all that kind of fun stuff. If you know how to use the wing appropriately and if your driving style is accustomed to it. Joe Guan Yu's driving style, it's okay for this front wing. He ended up folding parts of it under and essentially damaging the front wing in qualifying one, which is why he placed as low as he did. Now, is that necessarily his fault? Yes and no. Is it partially the car's development fault? Yes and no. I think it's about a 50-50 shot in this case. If you're Joe Guan Yu and you know you have a lower front end and it's a little pointier and it's a little shallower than you are used to, you need to be able to make that adjustment around the corners. Let's say you take a little bit longer of a looping turn and you don't necessarily hug the curbs as much. Obviously, this wasn't the case this time. The track was also a little bit dusty, just the way the wind was blowing. The beach is right there on some of the corners, so it was a little sandy. You lose a little bit of traction. Joe Guan Yu damaging the car just a little bit. Ends up in the very bottom five. The only reason why he wasn't last today is because Logan Sargeant is not racing this weekend, so he missed qualifying. Joe Guan Yu ends up in 19th. Valtteri Bottas makes it into Q2, showing some real promise in this Sauber car. It looks like he's getting a little bit more used to it. It's working more with him than it is against him at this point, which is a fantastic job for him. They just need to get the race day trim correct, and I think Valtteri's going to do very, very well this weekend. A little bit of drama. Perez not giving himself any kind of gifts or favor this weekend. Massive, massive obstruction call on him on Nico Hülkenberg on Hülkenberg's fast lap. We know the kind of pace that this Haas can do, especially under Nico Hülkenberg. He can do some magic. He can get into Q3 every once in a while when he means to and when the track conditions are correct. At the time of this obstruction, Nico Hülkenberg was definitely on pace to be in the top 10, to get into Q2 and potentially Q3. Checo Perez, in my opinion, not paying attention. They do have side mirrors. Don't forget about this. They do have side mirrors on these cars. They're not the biggest cars. I'm sure they shake like there's no tomorrow. But at the same time, you can't always rely on your pit crew to tell, or your engineer to tell you there's someone coming up behind you. Perez 100% in the way. Slam dunk penalty for Checo Perez in qualifying one. We don't find out what the penalty is until Q3, and we're going to get into that later. But because of this incident, Hülkenberg was not able to make it out of Q1. He did play 16th. He was so close to making it into Q2, but racing is as racing is, and he was not able to make it out of Q1. Pierre Gasly was just there to fill a space. He placed 17th in the bottom five. Not a horrible weekend for the Alpine. Not exactly the best weekend. Again, they're just collecting information from here on out until their next upgrade shows along or comes along, which rumor has it is going to be a couple more races from now. A lot of these drivers and a lot of these teams are more the teams. They're letting it slip a little bit, or just like a tease that the first set of upgrades is going to be coming either next race or the race after that. They're not going to be huge upgrades, but it's going to be that smaller things that lead to bigger things that lead to a whole kind of package. That's the majority of the upgrades that what I've hear is what's going to come around in the next couple weeks. Another disappointment out of Q1, Daniel Ricciardo. And it wasn't because he didn't race well. It's not because he didn't qualify well. He was doing very, very well. The beginning of Q1, not exactly the best that I've ever seen him do, but you could see as it went further and further and deeper into Q1 that he was able to get a little bit more of a comfortable feel behind the car. At one point, he was the top 10 just before the Q1 window closed. Unfortunately for him and a couple other drivers, but the biggest impact was on Daniel Ricciardo. He was hit with a track limit violation, which knocked him from 10th all the way down to 18th by the time everything was said and done. Disappointing qualifying for him, just pace-wise and just position-wise. More position than pace, because if you realistically look at it, he did do a really good job in qualifying. He just has a few more things to tighten up. So when all things were said and done, Q1, your bottom five are as follows: from 16th to 20th, Nico Hülkenberg, Pierre Gasly, Daniel Ricciardo in 18th, Joe Guan Yu in 19th, and Logan Sargeant, because he's not racing, started in 20th. Sorry, not started 20th, is just in 20th spot. Getting into Q2, again, weather is what it is. These guys are starting to get a little bit faster, except for a couple of notable names. One more shocking than the rest of them. Very uneventful. There was no blocking. There was no obstruction. There was no drama, no hitting the walls, which is fantastic. This course has a tendency to, when it rains, it pours. Some guys, when somebody hits the wall, just kind of like that trickle effect. By the time you get going again, the track is clear. You've lost your mojo, so on and so forth. but not this weekend, which was nice to see. The only disappointing thing that you're going to see, or that we did see this weekend, was the performances from some people and from some teams that you're starting to question if their development is even going in the right direction. That team specifically, in my opinion, is Mercedes. And it wasn't George Russell. It was Lewis Hamilton. It seems that whatever grounds he has gained at the end of last season, where they dealt with their no side pod issues, then they got side pods, and just Hamilton gradually got better and better and better. They're still complaining about a seat. Now this season, they've moved the seat back like he's asked. Then he broke his seat, and it's just been complaints and lack of performance for the beginning of the entire season. Yes, this is still only the third race. I understand that. We have 21 more races to go if everything goes appropriate. But the direction that you see Hamilton going now, I don't think it's going to be a very fantastic weekend. And for me, myself, I don't see the developmental program of Mercedes being earth-shattering by the time you hit halfway through the season. It's not going to be earth-shattering or game-changing by the time you get to the end of the season. And if you're anyone like me who likes to play Formula One fantasy, you're already starting to think that you're going to drop him from your fantasy team and just save yourself like $27 million in your pool. It's not that he's driving horribly. It's not that he's had a bunch of out of the blue things that happen to him that prevent him from his pace. It's just, in my opinion, the development of the car, and specifically this weekend, again, the performance of the engine. Whatever they've done to modify this engine to get more performance out of it, they need to stop. They need to go back to where they were at the end of 23. Yes, they'll be a little bit behind, but you'll be back to the main drawing board. You'll be able to see what you've modified, what you've gotten wrong, and what you need to improve upon. They can only get better than this. But it only seems to be Hamilton's car. He's got no real straight end speed. His cornering and speed and pace, it's okay. They complain about the brakes this weekend that they were really spongy. Like, it's just pretty basic shit that you don't hear even from Haas or Sauber or even Alpine. You don't hear these kind of complaints from these engine or from these teams. But you're starting to hear it more and more often from Mercedes. What's going on? What's going on in that camp where it looks like they're taking more steps back than they are forward? You can see Hamilton's getting frustrated. Okay, that's part of the sport. You're a 7-time world champion, but he seems to not be able to handle it when his weekend is not amazing. He doesn't make it out of Q2. He ends up being 11th. That's the big shock of this qualifying, in my opinion. He should be way higher than that. He should be in the top 10, if not the top 5, every weekend with the type of car that they say they have. They haven't started apologizing for the car yet, but they're only one step away from that. Mercedes, anybody who works there, if you're listening, take a breath, take a look at the car, take a step back. You now have time between Australia and Japan. Don't overthink it. Look at what you've done in the past at the end of the 23 season and look where you are now. Obviously, there's something that's not working. The aerodynamics of the car are the best that we've seen in a few years. It's just the performance of the engine. You don't have the power. Don't overthink it. Go back to your basics. Repair what you need to. Besides that, the bottom five out of the Q2, kind of the names that you would normally see. Everyone's pretty much placed where they should be at this point. Let's go through them right now. From 11th to 15th, respectively, Lewis Hamilton is 11th. Alex Albon in 12th. Not a bad showing for the Williams. He's kind of consistently been either 10th to 12th this season and last season, which is a very good pace for Williams. I would love to see them take that next step. Get Alex Albon into Q3 would be a fantastic step. 13th, Valtteri Bottas. 14th, Kevin Magnussen. And 15th, Esteban Ocon. At this point, how the Williams is playing out, how Haas is playing out, and how Kik Sauber is playing out, that's exactly where these guys are generally. It's the right spot for them. Again, I'm a Valtteri Bottas guy. I would love to see him higher than 13th. I would love to see him in Q3 all over again. I don't think it's going to happen this season. I think it's going to happen when his contract's up and he goes to a different team who have a little bit more resources, who are able to think outside the box a little bit differently, and who aren't concentrating so much on being a different team in a couple of years' time. I think the team needs to focus when it comes to Kik Sauber, concentrate on the driving, not so much the future of the team when it changes. With Q1 done, Q2 in the books, it is time for Dubois to show what they're made of. That is right. It is Q3. The wind has died down. The temperature is exactly where they need to be. And these guys are out to drive. Oh my God, were they driving? The season so far has shown the development of these cars is getting so fast that from first to 10th is like less than a second, as it should be. These guys are highly performing athletes. These cars are definitely in the zone where they need to be because you're in the top 10. It makes for very exciting qualifying, especially when nothing generally happens. There was no drama again, no crashing, nothing like this. Word came down at the beginning of Q3. Checo Perez's punishment for the obstruction, essentially, of Nico Hülkenberg, 3 grid penalty spots. No matter where Checo Perez is, he was going to lose 3 spots. So that would tell me that Checo is going to put the foot to the floor and it's going to be either all or nothing. He's either going to be in the top 10 or he's not going to be at all because he absolutely needs that spot. Well, unfortunately for him, he doesn't operate like that. He did a solid qualifying run, really good times, fast times for him, consistent times for Red Bull. Obviously, you're going to be in the top 5 just because you've got that rocket ship underneath you. All things are going to be great. But you didn't see that urgency when he knew he had a penalty coming. You saw him push it, but you didn't really see him push as fast as you would want to see him. Obviously, he's getting beaten up by Max Verstappen. That is the way it will go until Checo Perez either goes to a different team or Max Verstappen retires. And even then, when they're in the old folks' home, Max Verstappen will still be faster than Perez at everything that will ever come their way. But he's also almost getting outqualified by a McLaren and a Ferrari. Ferrari is on point this weekend. They love Australia. They always pull in really, really good points. They pull in a solid performance. And qualifying for them was absolutely no different. Notably, not Charles Leclerc, but Carlos Sainz. First week back from appendicitis. Us normal mortals take about 2 to 3 weeks to recover before you get back into your daily routine. And that's just a nice relaxing routine for us. But as we all know, an F1 driver doesn't exactly have the easiest time at work. Potentially 5.5-6 G's around corners. Not exactly what I would call a nice relaxing day at the office. Carlos Sainz is back a week after getting it done, and he is showing that he is about 98% there when it comes to health off the track, 100% on the track. You see him walking around quite gingerly before qualifying and before practice, thinking, should he really be here? He's still bandaged. He got a couple stitches. He needs to take another week off, you're thinking. Then you see him in the car, and you're like, no, he's good. He's absolutely amazing. He was flying around that track, making Checo look like the second tier or second driver of that team, like he noticeably is. I think Carlos Sainz now not only is putting a statement on Ferrari that Fred Vasseur made the absolutely wrong decision of firing him and picking up Lewis Hamilton. If you want to compare the performances, it's definitely a lose-lose for Ferrari right now. But now I also think that Carlos Sainz is shooting higher than Mercedes, that he is going after Checo Perez's spot in Red Bull. That is the team that everyone wants to be on. That's the car that you want to be in if you want to win championships, if you want to challenge for championship points, and if you want to get any kind of consistent performance out of the cars. And Carlos Sainz was definitely showing that today. He ended up second on pure merits. Even with Checo's penalty, Sainz was still going to be second. He is right behind Max. Max is having to look behind him from now until the end of the season. Ferrari has developed this car extremely well. And taking into consideration that Max doesn't always do so well in Australia, it's a pretty good combination for an exciting weekend. So your top 10, let's get into it. From first to 10th, let's get into it right now. Max Verstappen first, Carlos Sainz is second, Lando Norris third, Leclerc is fourth, Oscar Piastri is fifth, Checo Perez with his penalty ends up being sixth, George Russell seventh, Yuki Tsunoda eighth. Really good qualifying from Yuki Tsunoda today. Wasn't anything out of the box extraordinary for him, but it was super consistent, and that's what he needs to start to put together for this season if he wants to keep his seat at RB Racing or to be even considered for actual Red Bull racing for the next season. Ninth was Lance Stroll, and 10th was Fernando Alonso. It was a fantastic weekend. Aston Martin, again, really solid performance. They are starting to pick up the pace just a little bit. I do think their development compared to last year, a little bit behind the eight ball from where it should have been at the beginning of the season. But then again, everyone's behind the eight ball when you get compared to Red. So with the qualifying out of the way, the stage is set, folks. But what is the stage set for? It is set for round three, the Australian Grand Prix. We are talking 14 turns, 58 laps. Each lap is 5.27 kilometers. Top speed of 339.9 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap, 1 minute 20 this or last year by Checo Perez. We are set to go. The stage is set. The weather is perfect. Everybody is where they need to be, except for Zhou Guanyu. He swaps out his nose piece again, which automatically gives him a pit lane start. He will be starting in 19th, back of the grid. Not quite where you want to be able to start the Australian Grand Prix, because we all know the history of the Australian Grand Prix. If 2023 is anything to remember from last year, it was carnage around that first corner. What, three times? Two times? It was absolutely a gong show. So with that, we've got five lights out and away we go. Everybody makes around corner one. Yay! Let's all cheer for that. No crashes, nobody in the gravel, nobody in the wall, nobody in the grass. We are off to the races. Max Verstappen keeps his first spot. Carlos Sainz is right behind him. And then all of a sudden, Carlos Sainz is on this rocket ship, it seems like. He passes Max on the second lap, and it looks like there is absolutely no issue with Carlos Sainz passing Max Verstappen. As you go around the lap further and further, all of a sudden you start to see a little hint of smoke coming out of the back of Max's car. And then there's more smoke. And 100% definitely there is smoke coming out of the car. He hits pit lane, and about halfway down pit lane, all of a sudden there's a small explosion on the back left rear tire of Max Verstappen's car. His car is on fire into pit lane. It's a good thing that he was close enough to get in there. Fire marshals are out there putting the car out. Max's day is 100% done. Five laps out of 58. The three-time world champion is not finishing this race. It breaks his winning streak. He wanted to keep going, but hey, this is racing, folks. And the group didn't miss a beat. Ferrari is out front and center. Carlos Sainz now has absolutely 100% clean air, clean track. There is nothing in his way from winning this victory, except for maybe the strategy from Ferrari. Fingers crossed that they get the strategy right. Also, fingers crossed that your pit stop works out perfectly. Average time lost per pit stop, 20 seconds. That, in this track, there's not a whole lot of places to pass. So 20 seconds is an absolute eons of time that you can either win or lose a race because of this. Because of the weather, it's still a nice warm day on this Sunday morning. It's still around about 40 degrees ambient temperature on the track, 27 just wind, which means it's higher degradation, which means generally a two pit stop race for everybody. Let's see how this turns out. Everybody came to race. Everybody came to pass. I don't think I've seen an Australian Grand Prix with so many passes and so much wheel-to-wheel racing. It was fantastic to see. And it was also fantastic to see a race where Red Bull wasn't in the equation, where it was just kind of a free-for-all to a certain extent. It did kind of turn out being the stereotypical race that we're used to for the last couple of years. One car definitely way out there. Everyone else just kind of trying to keep up. But it's that race trying to keep up is what we're all interested in watching. Let's be honest. Whoever's out in first, if they're far enough ahead, you kind of just ignore them and you just focus on the rest of the cars. The cars that we want to focus on is pretty much from 5 to 14. Back and forth, passing. George Russell really on pace, really aggressive today. Lewis Hamilton, much better performance when it came to his car. He was able to pass. He was able to keep up for a certain amount of time. The Haases, they were not at the back of the pack this time. It was actually quite nice to see. They didn't need to take advantage of any mistakes. They made their own opportunities, which is fantastic to see. Both drivers were 1-2 respectively in their race order. There wasn't a whole lot of infighting or any infighting at all on the track. Everybody came to play nice. Everybody knew that points were available, so let's not screw this up. For some teams, it was a great race. For some teams, absolutely horrible race. And the first set of drama that we're going to look at, unfortunately, Kick, again, same as last week. The performance of the car is not bad. Zhou Guan Yu, Valtteri Bottas, trying to do the best they can with what they have. They're making do. They're like top 12. They can get in those points if they have a good race and nothing goes wrong. Until you have to pit stop. It was an embarrassment last weekend. Valtteri Bottas ended up getting a pit stop that was a minute long. There was no penalties. They just messed up that bad. Okay, it's his turn this time. First pit stop. We're looking at a collective time of about 45 seconds on his pit stop. It was absolutely fucking atrocious again. These pit crews practice. This is what they do. They're engineers for the cars and they're the pit crew. They know what they need to do. One guy on each gun, one guy on each tire, two guys stabilizing the car itself, two guys in the front tweaking the wings if they need to. Like, everybody has a job. This is what you got hired to do. Sauber, you need some new pit crew guys, or there needs to be a massive shakeup somehow, because it is costing your drivers the races and points for your team. Valtteri Bottas, another horrible, horrible pit stop for him. A couple laps later, Zhou Guan Yu comes in for the pit. Again, another horrible, horrible pit stop for Joe. It's comical at this point. You feel bad for the drivers in those cars. It's almost like, hey, just put on a set of hards and just go to the very end. Take the penalty that you're going to get for not using two different types of tires, and you'll still place higher than if you go in and get your tires changed by your pit crew. It's just absolutely atrocious. It's horrible. People either need to get fired, they need to do better training, new equipment, whatever the case may be. Something is misfiring. It's costing them points. It's not costing them race wins, because let's be honest, that car is not exactly rocketing up the stands, but you want to still be able to give your drivers the best opportunity they can, and Sauber is not doing that for their drivers. And then you go in on the flip side, McLaren, 2.4, 2.5 second pit stops. It's fantastic. When that team is on clicking on all cylinders, it is absolutely astonishing. Everyone was out to race. Almost no drama at all. Back and forth, tire to tire, wheel to wheel racing, all the way up until lap 17. And a familiar face with a familiar issue starts coming up again. We talked about him in qualifying, the reason why he's not as high as he needs to be and why he wasn't as high as he needed to be last weekend. Lewis Hamilton, another engine failure. Lap 17 brings out a virtual safety car. At this point, he's got to be thinking, I cannot wait to finish 21 more races and get the fuck out of Mercedes. It's an issue that Mercedes has not used to. It's an issue that Mercedes should not be having to deal with. And it's affecting Lewis Hamilton, which means it's affecting the team. Because we all know when His Highness is not happy that Lewis Hamilton, he doesn't just chalk it up to, well, you know, it was kind of a bad weekend. It was, you know, we all tried our best. We'll get back at it next weekend. Nope. He's going to blame the car. He's going to blame everybody else but himself, which is fair to a certain extent when it comes to this. Just don't put it on the team. Don't say the car's not where it needs to be, that the car is horrible, that this is bad and that's bad. Chalk it up. Be a professional. Be an adult, especially when it comes to interview time. And be like, yeah, you know what? It wasn't quite the weekend that we had hoped for. Hopefully the next race will get everything worked out. And then we're just going to continue on. Next question. But Lewis Hamilton doesn't do that. He whines and complains in his own little way. He takes little pokes here and there. So unfortunately for Lewis Hamilton, 17 laps out of his race, and he is done for the day. These finishes are starting to definitely affect his standings. I mean, in the Drivers' Championships, he is still the top 10. But it's not by a whole lot. We've got people like, well, I'm not gonna spoil it for you. We'll wait till we get to the top 10 in the Drivers' Championships just to see how bad his performance and the car's performance is affecting his point total. With that virtual safety car, and albeit a very short virtual safety car, just for where Lewis Hamilton was able to park. It took them about a minute and a half, 2 minutes max to get that car back out of the way. Fernando Alonso was able to sneak in, get a new set of tires. He was the only one that did this, you know, in that very, very brief window that did not affect his pace. Very smart, very heads up play from Fernando. Ends up getting a new set of tires, also brings him up about five or six spots. Two more people go in. But again, when you're losing 20 seconds per spot, you can easily fall down the group a lot faster than you want to. Fernando had a good race. A little bit of drama at the very, very end. We're going to talk about that when we get to the rest of the wrap up for the race. But all in all, good race from Fernando. A really promising future for him still. He is a little bit on the older side. And everyone's thinking, is this going to be his last hurrah? He's like early 40s, I do believe. When's it time to call it quits? He's still performing. He's still getting points. He's getting almost as many points as most of the, you know, higher end superstars or younger superstars, you could say, in the sport. He's super consistent. He is that guy that is going to last. There are rumors as well that Fernando Alonso has been in talks, and I mean deep talks, with Mercedes. I have a tendency to agree with these kind of rumors. It would be a very smart move up for him to go from Aston Martin to Mercedes. I think he's done with Aston Martin, the developmental program and just the way it's run. I don't think it's for him. Mercedes is more along his speed. They've got the history. They've got the technology behind it. At least one car is running really, really well. And I think that's more of a driver performance thing than a mechanical performance thing. So I do hope Fernando Alonso ends up in Mercedes next year. I think it'd be good to see him in the silver and in the silver jumpsuit next year. But all in all for him, really, really great race for him. And other really good races for guys that it's about time. Oscar Piastri, Lando Norris. With the Red Bulls essentially out of the picture, it's time for them to step up. It's definitely that battle of second and third place to see how close they really realistically are to Ferrari and to Red Bull. And they're a solid third race in. I think they're very much the solid, undisputed third place team in the grid. Can they keep up with Ferrari realistically, unless something drastic happens to Ferrari, which has been known to happen? Realistically, no. They cannot keep up with Ferrari. Definitely they cannot keep with Red Bull, depending on who's driving. Are they outperforming Mercedes? Yes, 100%. Mercedes, in my opinion, is their closest. We'll call them rivals with air quotes, but they are substantially faster and better equipped than Mercedes is this year. So third race in, McLaren, you either got to step up and show that you can face Ferrari for that second place, or you need to definitely establish yourself firm foothold as your third place team on the grid. I think today is a perfect example of it was their race to lose third place in the constructors in third place position as the team or team on the grid. And they fulfilled that mandate. They're definitely the top third team now. They showed great consistency. When they were close to driving to each other, it was fantastic teamwork. No one was trying to out-battle somebody here. There were team orders that came into play, and there was no argument. It was a realistic situation with mature realization that, yeah, I'm not the fastest out of the two cars. I'm not going to complain. We're going to let the other car pass because it's the best for the team. It was amazing to see. Definitely, definitely a big step up for McLaren. I think they only have to go up from here on out. I don't see their developmental program taking them a big step back, especially because they learned from what worked last year. They're going to implement that into this year, and just nothing but great teams for the papaya color team. Now, that's not to say they don't have a lot of work to do if they want to challenge Ferrari for the second place. They do still have a ton of work to do in that sense. It's not necessarily the engine development. It's, in my opinion, more along the lines of the aerodynamic development of the car. They seem a little bit heavier, a little bit more sluggish compared to the Ferraris with their sleek design and just how the car moves around. The drivers, of course, they don't have as nearly as much experience as the Ferrari drivers, but that can also be an advantage for them. Youth is not always a bad thing when it comes to the sport. Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris definitely have a very, very bright future ahead of them. Now, they just need to be able to mature at a quick enough rate where they can catch up to the maturity of the Ferrari and the Red Bull drivers. And then I think they're going to be able to push for a second place. But I don't see that happening until the 2025 season, if not maybe 26. But I don't see a downside to that team at all in the next couple of years. Now let's talk about Ferrari for a second. When something like this happens, and by this I mean when the three-time dominant champion is out of the race, sometimes, as the expression goes, the lights shine too bright. And then you end up not performing as intelligently or as you should. And this was definitely the case that could have happened to Ferrari when Max goes out. Ferrari does have a history of making the wrong strategic calls when it comes to letting some drivers pass, when to put on tires, which driving plan to do, you know, things of that nature. Some people even call them a little bit clowns. The way they operate things is a bit of a circus. It's flashy. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't always end up in the best places for their drivers. Well, this was definitely not, and I mean not, one of those circumstances. Ferrari definitely showed that they are able to take the lead when the opportunity has arisen. And when it's not that it's stacked against them, but it's essentially their race to lose. They've learned. It looks like they have finally learned what they fucked up in the 2023 season. They let the drivers drive. Carlos Sainz is killing it. Proper communication. Short. Sweet. How are the tires? We're going to plan A. And there is no bickering. There's no question mark. Hey, what do you think we should do? Here's the plan. Let's stick with it. At one point, Carlos Sainz had an 8-second lead to the second driver on the grid. It was an amazing, amazing drive from him. Yes, he didn't exactly have a whole lot of competition this weekend, but that's when some drivers have a tendency to lose concentration and things go wrong. This is Australia. You lose concentration, you blink when you shouldn't, and all of a sudden your race is over and you're in the wall. A tire blows, you overheat the car, you're not noticing. All of a sudden you're taking a turn a little bit too wide. You lose a second here, you lose a second there, then all of a sudden your race is totally done. This was not the case for Carlos Sainz. His eyes were firmly on the prize, and he did not disappoint at all. Not only that, but Ferrari in general, for the car development, the performance, the reliability, and their strategies from here on out, they have set and sent a massive statement to not just Red Bull, but the rest of the Formula One grid going, we're not the pushovers that we were last year or the year after that. We're done our mistakes. We've learned from them. We are here to win, and here's how we're going to do it. Massive statement. They are set to be the Red Bull killers of the 2024 season. The way the car performed, the top speed. I think Carlos Sainz still would have given Max Verstappen a run for his money, and it would have been a much closer race than it was had Max not left or not DNF the race. It's a serious pressure coming on Red Bull this year from Ferrari. They've also made that massive statement to McLaren going, you're still young. You're still learning. Yeah, you can try to get second place in the grid when it comes to teams. It ain't going to happen. They showed McLaren that Ferrari's in a different league, that they have a lot of work to do to catch up to the Scarlet Ferraris. And it was just the proper performance that we expected from Ferrari the last couple of years that was just lacking. And plus, it's Carlos Sainz. What a story. You have appendicitis last week. You take a week off. Then all of a sudden you kill it in qualifying. You get second. And now you win the Grand Prix. And I still think he would have won no matter what. It was just the performance that we have been waiting for, especially as not just from a Ferrari fan's point of view, but from an F1 fan point of view. There is officially a challenger to the championship team and driver. This is going to set up a fantastic rest of the season, taking into consideration that I hope all of the aerodynamic advancements and strategies continue to go their way like they did this weekend. It's going to be a very, very close rest of the season between those two teams. With Lewis Hamilton driving the way he was, and with Max Verstappen not being not in the race period at all, there was one driver that you would absolutely expect to arise to the occasion. Yes, he didn't qualify as high as he needed to, but he also has the fastest car on track He also has the most highly developed car on track, and he is in need of a new contract. This should prompt some person, any driver, enough to really push and get the win and show that you do deserve to stay in Formula One. But obviously, Checo Perez doesn't think this way. He is more analytical. Somehow he's lost that, at least this race in Australia. Maybe the car wasn't too happy. Maybe it was just not his weekend. But he didn't exactly finish higher or much higher than where he started the race. You didn't see that aggression in his driving that you needed to see. You are the second driver in Red Bull. You got second in the Drivers' Championship last year. You won the Constructors' Championship last year. You need to show that you are not just a seat filler in that team, that you can climb through those ranks. Checo did not show any of that. He was there. He lost a couple of spots. Not that he actually fought for his spot where he started. He seemed to get passed a couple times quite easily. He did fight back. He was able to gain his spot back where he started, and then a couple of spots after that. But he just did not show the drive and the determination and kind of that fuck you that you needed from your second driver like him on a day like today. Your champion is out. Your number one driver is out. It is up to you to do the absolute best you can and to get as many points as you can. And you can't tell me from a driver who got second in the Drivers' Championships and won the Constructors that the best you can do is top three. Actually, top five. You can't tell me that top five is the best that you can do on a day like today. Were you going to catch Carlos Sainz that was so far out front? Okay, realistically, no. Max would have had a hard time keeping up with him or winning, period. So I don't expect you to be able to catch Sainz that far up. But I do expect you to pass at least one of the McLarens. You do have a more superior car than them. You have more experience than them. You have a better record than them. You score more points from them. And yet, somehow, by the time the race is done, you are seconds behind the closest McLaren. This is not boding well for Checo Perez. This is not the type of day that he needs to have to keep his seat at Red Bull. Especially not when you've got a guy who won the race who doesn't have a seat next year. Essentially, you may have lost your seat to the guy who just won the race because Perez was not able to show Red Bull that, I mean, he's got the determination. I'm sure he'll have some excuse. The car wasn't in the right spot, or it was really hard to pass, or it was temperature this, or mechanical this, or driver that, whatever the excuse may be. But as a second driver in the team that won everything last year, you need to be able to perform to your best, and I don't think he's able to do that. I think Checo Perez's stint at Red Bull, it's the beginning of the end for him. Did he still finish in the top five? Yeah, absolutely. It was a great finish. He got points for the team, got points for himself. That's great. But he didn't step up when Red Bull needed him to. So we're ending the near of the race. Cars are making some spots. Some cars are kind of stuck where they are. Drivers are not performing the way they should for some, and some are almost overachieving. We're on the last lap. This is the victory lap. Carlos Sainz is in the lead. He's going to win. Well, turn six comes around, and it's a battle between George Russell and Fernando Alonso. And this is also going to kind of double into the story of the race today, I think. And something happens. All right. So George Russell crashes. Okay. You look at it, and it looks like he's got a little bit of understeer that just kind of overcorrects, overcompensates, ends up hitting the wall, slides. It looked worse than it actually was just because the tire got stuck on the side and he just kind of ended up half rolling. So he ended up on his side down corner six. Okay, so it's a crash. It happens. It's not very often that you end a race on a yellow flag. It should have been red flagged, but I mean, he was literally right in the middle of the road. It is what it is, last lap. You take a look at it and it almost looks like a gust of wind kicked up. So Fernando Alonso's in front, and it doesn't look like Fernando does anything. Now, come to the end of the race, it's kind of hard to explain. It doesn't look like Fernando Alonso does anything. He's trying to block George Russell from passing him, which is not illegal. He's not driving dangerously, in my opinion. Fernando's got a couple of reports that his throttle's sticking, so it's not quite going the way that he wants to. He needs to get around a couple more corners, and he's pretty much done the race, and he's got his position. George Russell, it looks like I said, it looks like a gust of wind, and oversteer ends up hitting the wall. So race is over, and then all of a sudden, Fernando Alonso and George Russell are called to the stewards gallery. They're called up to talk to the stewards. After the race, Fernando Alonso is handed a 20-second penalty for causing the crash of George Russell. And we're sitting there going, how? He didn't touch him. He didn't brake check him. He didn't do any of this kind of shit. My automatic assumption is that schoolboy George Russell is whining and bitching to Toto, and Toto's going up and he's talking to the stewards. The stewards' finding, because of the 20-second, is that the way that Fernando Alonso was driving, he was driving at an irregular rate and weight, which caused George Russell to crash. When you look at the evidence off of Fernando Alonso's car, and they haven't challenged this decision yet. Fernando Alonso openly and very clearly says he's having issues with the throttle, so he's having to gear down. His gears are sticking, which I guess in turn caused George Russell to hit the wall because he thought he was getting brake checked. On top of that, the way these cars are made is that when a car changes directions erratically, slows down erratically, it kind of throws off the airflow off the car, which can give a driver behind you much more dirtier and rougher air, almost turbulence than what they're used to. And this is the basis for the stewards giving Fernando Alonso a 20-second penalty, which drops him down a spot, which promotes George Russell. Well, George Russell technically didn't finish the race, but in the driver's championship, it affects the points. This, in my opinion, folks, is absolutely 100% horseshit. This is not a penalty. I've listened to therace.com, listened to F1 TV. All of them are agreeing that, yeah, it was a dangerous move by Fernando. And then the evidence comes out that he's having issues with the car. At what point can the driver behind, or at what point can George Russell realistically look at himself and go, hey, that was my fault. He was having mechanical issues. He didn't know it at the time, granted. But it's not an automatic issue that Fernando Alonso is at fault. He had issues with the car, and yet the stewards still gave him the 20-second penalty. This is absolutely horseshit. Whatever happened to this being just a racing incident? Was it because it caused a crash? Was it because it caused substantial damage? George Russell's perfectly fine, by the way. Did his interview, all this kind of stuff. Of course, he had this half-assed, well, I don't really know what happened, and Alonso did this. And essentially kind of shuffled off the blame like a good little schoolboy rat does and goes, oh, it was somebody else's fault. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't lose control of my own car. It was the guy ahead of me. It was his fault because I thought he was brake checking me or driving erratically. Fuck that. You're a professional race car driver. He has issues with his car. Whether you know that or not, you should be aware enough where you are that you should be able to not crash your car because of what someone does ahead of you, especially when they don't touch you. They weren't even anywhere near you, and yet you blame somebody else. This is the type of racing that we have to deal with now, and the stewards are more than welcome to listen to the guy that crashed going, well, you're right, he did move from right to left in an aggressive way, and he caused you to crash. No, George Russell caused George Russell to crash. And unfortunately, for Carlos Sainz especially, and for the fans, that's how the Australian Grand Prix ends this year. Totally taking away all of the fanfare and all of the much-earned prestige and happiness and just fantastic overall driving that Carlos Sainz did. Taken all away because all of a sudden they blame Fernando Alonso for George Russell's crash. It was lap 58 of 58. It's like, guys, come on. It's not Alonso's fault. It's George Russell's fault. Like, you're a professional race car driver. Things go fast. If he hit you, yeah, absolutely. It's Fernando's fault. if he actually brake checked you and you ran into the back of him, yeah, absolutely, Fernando's fault. One, Fernando did not brake check you. Two, he didn't touch you. Two or three, you didn't run into him either. You had oversteer caused by the wake off his car because he had throttle issues. You lost control of your own car and you hit the wall. None of that is Fernando's fault, but because Mercedes complains enough because they got a fucking history of it, and because the stewards are a bunch of pushovers and there's no actual black and white consistency when it comes to the rules, a driver who should have gotten a place higher than he did all of a sudden loses points and gets blamed for a crash that wasn't his fault. Good job, stewards. And like I said, unfortunately, that's how the race ended. Safety car, really slow, but still, congratulations, Carlos Sainz. This is his third F1 victory ever. Much deserved. Great racing. Very great future for him. He's really padding his resume for the next season, or at least till halfway through the season when the offers start flooding in, and I do expect them to flood in. It was fantastic. Congratulations. Let's go through the top 10 right now. Carlos Sainz in first, Leclerc in second, full Ferrari lockout 1 and 2, 3 and 4 respectively is a McLaren lockout. Norris in third, Piastri in fourth. There were team orders a little over halfway through the race that Norris was faster than Oscar Piastri. Oscar was set to be on third place, first Australian to actually be on the pole or on the podium in Australia in many, many, many years. But he didn't complain. He knew that Norris was faster than him. They ended up switching positions. Great teamwork there. Checo Perez ended in fifth. Like I said, dude needs to do more. You started in sixth. You gained one spot in 58 laps. You need to be able to do better. After this bullshit penalty was in place, Lance Stroll ends up in sixth. Yuki Tsunoda in seventh. Fernando Alonso drops from sixth to eighth. Nico Hülkenberg and Kevin Magnussen round out the top 10, ninth and 10th. Good point haul for Haas today. They are not exactly known for finishing in the points. When they do, it's kind of a little bit of a lucky circumstance. Austral, very, very supportive today. They were a little conservative. They didn't do anything dumb. They didn't take any long pit changes. Both Hülkenberg and Magnussen got along, which is great. We all know they don't exactly have the best history together. Just an all-around solid grown-up race from Haas. It was fantastic. I do have to make one mention. Daniel Ricciardo finished 12th today. If there was a driver that needed and absolutely had to make a statement this season to keep his seat, it is Daniel Ricciardo. There is starting to become rumors where they're saying that he's done, that he's not driving with the passion that he had before. His performance isn't exactly keeping him in that elevated seat. They're not exactly keeping him in, or his driving ability is not exactly keeping him in the upgrade to Red Bull seat conversation. He is a great guy. Everybody loves him. It's just not the start that he needs. 12th is still respectable, just out of the points, but he needs to start getting points. He also needs to start out driving Yuki Tsunoda a lot sooner than later, and he needs to do it in a very emphatic style. He needs to start blowing Yuki Tsunoda out of the water just for people to consider him a proper driver still in this day and age. Once all things were said and done, they were doing the post-race interviews. Obviously, Max Verstappen had a lot of time on his hands being out like 5 laps in. He did let everybody know that essentially what had happened was when he did his formation lap, he pressed the brakes to stop before the lights went out. His back rear tire, his brake pad, didn't release. So he did 5 laps at a couple hundred kilometers an hour with the brake pad still on. So think of driving with your emergency brake on, going as fast as you possibly can. This is essentially what happened to Max. When he was going into the pit lane, you could see something explode. That was the brake pad, caliper, rotor, all of it. It just got so, so hot that the ceramics had nowhere to cool off, had nowhere to expand. They just exploded, blew a hole in the tire. Nothing anybody could have done. It wasn't a preparation error. It wasn't a human error. It was just one of those mechanical errors that seem to happen, whether you're a 7-time world champion, a 3-time world champion, or if you're a rookie. Mechanical mistakes can happen to the best of you. So let's get into the Drivers' Championship racing points right now. Max Verstappen, even though a DNF today, is still first with 51 points. Leclerc is now up from third to second with 47 points. Checo Perez drops from second to third with 46 points. Carlos Sainz hops up two spots to fourth with 40 points. Oscar Piastri is still in fifth with 28. Lando Norris jumps two spots. He's now in sixth with 27 points. George Russell drops three spots. He is now in seventh with 18 points. Fernando Alonso drops one spot. He is now in eighth with 16 points. Lance Stroll, because of his performance today, he is jumps up three spots. He's now in ninth with 9 points. And like I said, because of the last couple of races and the DNF today, Lewis Hamilton drops one spot. He is now 10th with 9 points. I do not remember a time since watching Formula One where Lewis Hamilton was not in the top five when it came to points. This is not a good start for him. This is not a good start of his farewell tour in Mercedes. Does this make Ferrari think they made the wrong choice? I don't think so. But will this kind of solidify that Hamilton has made the right decision with leaving Mercedes? I think that's more along that lines. Constructors' Championships, Red Bull is still in first with 97 points. Ferrari is right on their heels now. They're second with 93 points. McLaren's in third with 55. Aston Martin is up one spot. They're now in fourth with 27 points. Mercedes drops one. They're in fifth with 26 points. Red Bull H, or if you want to call them Visa Cash App Red Bull, whatever the hell you want to call them, they are up three spots to sixth with 4 points. Haas drops one spot to seventh. They are also with 4 points. And Williams, Kick, and Alpine are all tied for eighth, ninth, and tenth with 0 points, respectively. I do see Williams catching some points this season. I do expect to see Kick Sauber getting some points this season, although not exactly a whole lot. I do not expect to see Alpine at all catch more than 5 points. They're just in such disarray when it comes to their organization, when it comes to their car development. I would be amiss if they got more than 10 points this season. That's where they stare at. That's where they stand at, in my opinion. And there you have it, folks. That is the breakdown of round three, the Australian Grand Prix. And that can only mean one more thing, that we've got one more race coming up. It is the Japanese Grand Prix. It is Suzuka. It is the April 5th to 7th. April 5th, April 7th weekend. Again, for us here in Canada, it's going to be a Saturday race. There is no shootout. There is no sprint. This is just one of those where you want to either go to bed really early to get up to watch, or you're going to watch when you actually get up at a reasonable hour. Weekend warm-up starts up at 10:30 our time on Wednesday. First practice is Thursday at 11:30. Sorry, let's try that again. The weekend starts at Wednesday night for us. 10:30 p.m. is the weekend warm-up. First practice is Thursday night at 9:30, and then we're swinging into Friday morning for practice 2 and 3, respectively. We're talking midnight and then again at 9:30 p.m. Pre-qualifying show for us is at 11 p.m. Qualifying, where all of a sudden we're into Saturday at midnight. Post-qualifying show is at 2 a.m. Now, the pre-race show for us is still going to be Saturday, but we're looking at 10 o'clock at night on Saturday, and the race itself is 11 o'clock Saturday night. If you want to watch the post-race show, that is 1 a.m. Sunday morning. So not super late, but it's going to go super late. Suzuka has a tendency to have really unpredictable weather. Last time we saw them in 2023, we had tractors on the course picking up cars, other F1 drivers and F1 cars almost hitting the recovery equipment, all sorts of drama out there last time we were in Japan. Hopefully we do not have as much drama and just clean racing. But hey, the way this season's going, you just absolutely have no idea. And as I wrap things up, as I was always like to say, I would like to say thank you for everyone for turning into F101. And until next time, keep the adrenaline pumping and the wheels a-spinning.